Evet. It's Friday, the 21st of November, 2025. Hello and welcome. I'm Alec Hogg. Well, I reconsidered. I wasn't going to be sharing with you a Friday editor's desk, but actually it makes a lot of sense because we've got some cracking stories that have been published on the BizNews website, all for you. And, well, if you have good stories, we need to tell you about them, and if we're going to tell you about them, I may as well give you some background into what's going on in my life and the latest developments here at BizNews. Glad to have you with me. Some fabulous stories on BizNews today, including one from John Mattison, which is quite it gives you quite a jolt when you read it. It's about the electoral process here in South Africa. And I've just got to point you towards a podcast that my colleague Chris Stain did yesterday with Wayne Sussman. Wayne has got to be the preeminent by a country mile expert when it comes to by-elections in South Africa. I did a bit of work on this myself. I started putting together a table. In fact, it's in Airtable, if you've ever used it. Really good database system and not terribly expensive either. And I've got a long list going back to 2021 of the by-election. So how it works in South Africa, we have a proportional representation system. And that means that when you have the major elections, and Wayne told us in that podcast, it's likely to have the next one, the next local elections on either the 4th or the 11th of November next year. So it's less than a year away from now. But anyway, when you have those elections in, say, Johannesburg, there are a certain number of seats that are available. Half of those seats are contested directly in wards. The other half of the seats are allocated according to the number of votes that are received by each political party. So we have, that's proportional representation, half the seats in a metro. The other half is first past the post in the ward. But what it means is that every single vote counts. So as Helen Ziller said in a recent conversation I had with her on BizNews TV, you really have to go out there and cast your vote, even though you might be sitting or living in a ward where you're pretty sure that your councillor for the political party that you are supporting will win comfortably and easily. Anyway, so what happens is that there are, well, thousands of these councillors that are elected every 5 years in the local elections. Some of them change political parties. Some of them die. Some of them just decide to get out of politics. And so when that happens, you need to then have a re-election, or what they call a by-election. And these happen regularly. Next week, there's some very big ones, and they are pretty important because the by-elections give us a temperature gauge on how the political scenario is happening in South Africa. We can see, on the one hand, are the people coming out to the polls? Are they more interested in politics than they might have been in the past? What is happening with the various political parties? How are the political parties developing? They use these by-elections as a test of their strengths, which will then also, with less than a year to go, give them a reflection of how they might perform next year in the local elections. Because that's November next year, well, according to Wayne and Chris and the conversation they had, will be the next big election in South Africa's cycle. Remember, every 5 years we have the local elections, and the other 5 years in between we have the provincial and national elections. And we had that in 2024 in May, and the previous one in 2021. So we're coming up for the next biggie, and that's in the local elections next year. But next week there are some very interesting by-elections. I'm not going to go into any detail because you can listen to the podcast. But in essence, there are tests of strength for the MK party in a constituency where they won 70% of the vote in 2024. And we'll see how, if, as Wayne says, if they can't win this one, when they won 70% of the vote in 2024, if they can't win that by-election, it shows you that the party is really going in a bit of a tailspin. Then there are some two-way contests between the DA and the ANC, and we've got Action SA is testing their muscle as well in an area where I guess they anticipate that they can win their second by-election. They've only just won their very first one in the Northwest Province, but they've been very selective where they have actually campaigned. And on top of all of that, we've got the DA versus PA boxing match that's happening in the Cape. I think there's one in the Northern Cape and one in the Western Cape that Wayne has highlighted. Go and watch it. It's a particularly good interview. Well, I mean, if you're listening to this, so you may as well go and listen to it as well, if that is what you prefer. Another good interview that Chris did yesterday, she certainly is getting some fascinating people into her studio, was with Connie Mulder, and that is a big story that has been very widely covered. The organization that Connie works for, Solidarity, a trade union, decided to highlight the fact that South Africa has the most race-based laws of any country on earth. And so as the delegates were coming into Johannesburg along the that national road from the airport into Sandton, they were hit by a huge billboard which said, "Welcome to the race-based legal law capital of the world." And the Joburg municipality didn't like that very much. Sorry, Joburg Metro. And they ripped down the banner or the billboard, to which, of course, there was a quite an outcry on both sides. The Joburg Metro, which is ANC-led, even though they only have, is it 30% of the vote there? But they've got others who are supporting them and keeping them going, including Action SA and PA, which brings a whole new dynamic into the whole situation there as well as we lead up to the next election. Add overlay there, the Government of National Unity, man, politics are a mishmash here in South Africa. But anyway, they maintained that there had been some breaking of local bylaws where, in essence, what they were saying, the real message was, we don't want delegates to see bad news when they come into South Africa. And it reminded me of that other big issue that went on yesterday where Cyril Ramaphosa, for reasons best known to him, decided to make an announcement about the US having changed its mind ahead of the G20, which happens this weekend. And then the White House coming back and saying, no, we haven't changed our mind. We are sending a charge d'affaires to basically pick up the baton because the US is going to be hosting the next G20. And that's it. Donald Trump's not coming. No senior member of our government is coming. We don't know what Cyril Ramaphosa is talking about. And it reminded me of something that I've quoted numerous times from a book by Richard Tedlow called Giants of Enterprise, where he focuses on the, I think it's seven great entrepreneurs from the United States who went off the rails towards the end of their lives. And he says the reason for that is what he calls derangement. And derangement happens when you have psychophantic people around you who make sure that your every whim, your every need, down to whether your coffee has got two or three or no spoons of sugar in it, so that you do not feel the normal day-to-day challenges that occur to most in society. And that gives you a sense of derangement, because to you, as this person in power who's fed all of this information as well, because along with the cups of coffee come a good news filter, because they give you stuff information that will please you rather than anything that might irritate you. And as you get exceedingly powerful and you have this bunch of people around you who are playing to your whims, you see the world in a very different way to the way that it really is. And I can only imagine that somebody said to Ramaphosa, oh, that SABC has released a report to say that the US is going to be attending the G20 after all. Ramaphosa picked that up and he then repeated it and, embarrassed himself and perhaps everybody else around him. And that to me is also why our president is so often shocked, as he tells us, by what he sees, because he's not exposed to the reality of what's happening in South Africa. He's not exposed to the impact of things like BEE legislation, which has given our economy such a smack. Solidarity and Connie Mulder and his team do a lot of research, reckons it's cost South Africa 3 percentage points a year in GDP growth, BEE. It wouldn't surprise me. And they explain that South Africa's inequality has got worse since 1994. The difference now, though, is that the rich people are all black and a very small elite, whereas the poor people remain all black as well. It's just crazy. And let's hope that somewhere along the line somebody wakes up. Okay, so those are the big stories today. And there's lots, apart from those two interviews of Chris's, there's lots on the site. And I would suggest you go in there, look out on your BizNews premium newsletter, which will be with you. That's why you are listening to this. But anyway, it comes out to you, remember, every day around about noon. I'm going to close off here with an investment insight from the excellent Katie Martin, who's the markets columnist for the Financial Times of London, for our partners in London. And she and Mark Kurifani had a conversation about what's going on in the markets after the release of results from NVIDIA. Initially gave the NASDAQ a 2% bump at the opening, but it didn't last. Katie's got far better insights into that. Let's have a listen.
So we obviously had a big shock to markets and stocks fell really hard in April after Donald Trump unveiled these global trade tariffs. And then pretty much the moment that he said, okay, I'm going to backtrack on some of the more extreme elements here, it's just been one-way traffic, this huge recovery that's taken place. And that's built on a few things. It's built on this idea that, you know, we're all familiar with this taco trade, right? Trump always chickens out. There's this idea that he will always back away from the more extreme stuff. There's the fact that earnings have actually been pretty good and the US economy has been much more resilient to the effect of tariffs and to policy uncertainty than people have been expecting. So there has just been an incredibly impressive rise in US and global stocks ever since April. And that just kind of ran out of steam a bit in recent weeks.
Yeah, let's talk about that specifically. As I mentioned, it started around early October, and there were a few things that I think combined to get investors a little worked up. What happened?
Well, so, okay, there's an element of cherry picking here, but you can see reasons for caution or for alarm in lots of different parts of markets at the moment. You look over at the private credit market, where there have been a few blow-ups recently, and that has got people worried about lending standards in private credit, about the prevalence of fraud there.
This is the First Brands thing, right?
This is First Brands, Tricolor. It's just a little cluster of these things, and it makes people think, I remember 2007. Is this a repeat of that? And then you just look at the valuation of some of these AI tech stocks and some of the huge deals they're doing with each other. And it all just adds up to this picture that, hang on, is this a bubble and is it going to pop like now?
Now, like I had mentioned, NVIDIA, for a moment anyway, swooped in and kind of eased those concerns with its earnings report on Wednesday. What was it exactly in that report that got everyone, even if briefly, in such a good mood?
It's not just any old chip maker, right? This is like the biggest company on the planet. It absolutely dominates the performance of all the big stocks indices in the States and globally. And it's just this prime example of a company that's right in the center of the AI trade. You know, the thinking for a lot of investors is, well, if NVIDIA is okay, then that means the AI trade is okay. And NVIDIA is super okay. So it reported a 62% rise in its revenues in the 3 months that ended in October, which is much more than investors have been anticipating. And its revenue forecasts are still like much higher than people have been thinking. And so it's pretty clear that this company is still selling a lot of chips. And its chief executive, Jensen Huang, said, there's been a lot of talk about an AI bubble. From our vantage point, we see something very different. One thing that's really important here to remember is that even if you accept that it's a bubble and there are some excesses going on here, there's no reason to think it has to pop today or tomorrow or next week. But the fact is, they are still scooping up the money, cranking out the chips. Everybody's happy. So this has certainly lightened the mood and helped some of these things to keep running towards the end of the year. But no one's sounding the all clear just yet.
Well, let's leave it there for today. Keep an eye on that premium newsletter for links to our freshest published content. Thank you for trusting me with your time. I'm Alec Hogg. I know where I'm going to be on Saturday. It's unfortunately not at in Dublin watching in person, but my goodness, are these eyes going to be glued to the TV, and I'm having the box by 15. Yeah. Confidence. Until Monday, cheerio.